questions. I want you to know the program back there, God's program did not fail. It's Bill Gates' program that failed.
That's right. That's right.
So if somebody has a question, we can take a few.
Right there. I'm going to put you on the mic.
When we saw you in Seattle several years ago, you also mentioned that it's not just amino acids and proteins in general, it's a certain type, right hand versus left hand, because one's actually toxic. And the natural selection process and all the silliness of that versus intelligent design, where our body can only use a certain type of protein fold, a certain type of amino acid, and they're impossible to make otherwise. If you can comment on that.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when I was a graduate student at Texas Tech, and I was going somewhere with my professor who knew I was a creationist, and he challenged me on evolution, on the origin of life, one of the origin of life specifically. I wanted to call it endocytosis, endosymbiosis. And unfortunately, I wasn't as well versed at that point to be able to defend the issue of, but endosymbiosis, the origin of the first eukaryotic cell, is skipping a whole bunch of steps. The origin of life currently is just it's a linchpin to evolution for sure. The whole thing just comes apart without having a good solid answer for the origin of life. And today they have none. There is just no explanation forthcoming from the evolutionary community on the origin of life itself. And in fact, they're at such a loss to explain it, they just will tell you that the origin of life is not part of evolution. If you bring this up, challenging evolution on this issue particular, that's certainly the answer you will get. Origin of life is not part of evolution. Evolution is about how organisms change through time, increasing complexity and diversity and that kind of stuff. The origin of life is not part of it. It's an essential beginning. The evolutionary theory is a theory to explain how this world came to be. I mean, there's even stellar cosmic evolution. It is grand theory of everything to explain not only the complexity and the diversity of life on Earth, but how it came to be in the first place. And it begins, the origin of life would begin with chemical evolution. That's what they call it. Chemical evolution. Monomers eventually have to form into polymers, and like the proteins and DNA and lipids, all the big complex polymers, the big macromolecules, needed to form first for the first cell to begin. But there's some huge challenges in that. Probabilistically, it's just the numbers are just so large. I mean, there are more atoms in the universe than the probability of even a single chain of 150 amino acids forming by chance. But because, like, one of the big problems is that if you have an environment where amino acids will form, which again are the links in a protein chain, there are two different types will form in that pool of amino acids. But in all life on Earth, there's only one of those two types used to make proteins. And as well, if DNA is this long chain is forming, the nucleotides itself that make up DNA are forming in some pool, you will end up having two different types of ribose that will form in there too, one of the core molecules of this, a left and a right-handed version. But in all life on Earth, only a right-handed version is found in all these, and they will not function if the other is inserted in there. And there was an experiment done by back in the 1950s, one biochemist sought out to try to explain how amino acids or some of these basic building blocks could form through purely natural processes, and constructed an apparatus to simulate an early atmosphere for the Earth, and where he put some methane in there, some ammonia, some water vapor, put a spark of electricity in there to generate some energy, and was able to get some amino acids to form. But again, you get both left and right-handed amino acids in there, and he intentionally left out oxygen, because any good biochemist knows that these molecules, the basic building blocks for things like proteins and DNA, will not form in the presence of oxygen. And so their assumption was that Earth's early atmosphere was a reducing atmosphere that didn't have any oxygen in it. But now it has become apparent, as they keep checking rocks, geology has revealed rocks deeper and deeper and deeper into the Earth's crust, that Earth seems to have always had oxygen. Always, and it's a huge problem. And Now, there's such a degree of certainty that life could not have originated on Earth because Earth seemed to have always had oxygen. That's one of the main reasons that NASA's main emphasis, if you look at it today, NASA's main goal, go on their website, look at is what they call astrobiology or exobiology, the search for the origin of life off planet. That's why they're sending these probes, spending billions of dollars, sending these stupid probes to Mars, can't even already feed people, sending these stupid probes all the way to Mars to look for the possible origin of life on Mars. That's the main purpose of all of their, all, it seems like to me, and that's because of the probabilities of life forming, especially here on Earth, seem to be so, so slim at this point. With oxygen present, going to be very, very nil. If they form, and one of the, they used to say it formed in a, like a warm little pond, but if water, two amino acids, the molecules that make protein chains, will break apart in the presence of water. It's a reaction called hydrolysis. So in the presence of water, a chain of amino acids will spontaneously break down. It's a condensation reaction that the cell goes through to link these amino acids together. So, I mean, there's huge, huge problems. You just go on and on about all the problems of the origin of life. They have no explanation for it whatsoever. They'll say, well, maybe amino acids, one of the explanations for how you get a left-handed only amino acid, if you were carefully controlling chemical reaction, you could get left-handed amino acids to form. Okay, so they propose, well, maybe in some on some charged substrate, like a charged clay or a crystal. And so if you hear them talking about origin of life happened on a crystal, that's what they're talking about. Maybe with some charged substrate where amino acids could form and you would only get left-handed amino acids possibly. The problem with this is if you have a pool of left-handed amino acids and you just let them set, they will start spontaneously reverting until they reach equilibrium, 50-50 left and right-handed. So, I mean, there's just huge, huge problems. But like I said, they just avoid the issue. But don't let them get away with it, because the origin of life is a necessary foundation for evolution. They just avoid it because they have no explanation. It's a huge, huge problem.
I think the experiment you're talking about is the Miller experiment in 53.
Stanley Miller and Urey.
The interesting thing to note about that is that to run the experiment, you need intelligence.
Yeah.
You need design, because you can't just run it randomly.
Yeah.
We seem to be hearing more and more from the Christian scientific community this term intelligent life. Is that not somewhat of a soft stepping stone for, intelligent design. Is that not somewhat of a soft stepping stone, hoping that the evolutionists seeing the evidence will step on that stone and yet still it's not going to bring him to God?
Yeah, I think so. But I see it to have an important role to play. Personally, I don't think it's possible to get an old world, an atheist, evolutionist person that's been born, bred, and raised in that to come all the way to young Earth, biblical history point of view. That's a big bridge to cross. But if you can get them to first see that there is evidence of design, then you can get them to start looking for who that designer might be. And if you get them that far, then with further study and reading, then you might get them to come all the way. But that's a big bridge to cross. And I think intelligent design serves an essential purpose in that way, getting them halfway there. But oddly, a lot of the young Earth creationists attack intelligent design as being flawed from its inception. Most of the intelligent design proponents are theistic evolutionists. And one of the most recent documentaries and books that came out of the ID community, the documentary called Darwin's Dilemma, and then the book itself, I actually have a copy of Stephen Meyer's book, Darwin's Enigma. It's similar title. Anyway, Darwin's Dilemma was a look at the fossil record and how the fossil record does not support evolution, because there's a sudden appearance of life in the fossil record. The fact that you have extreme preservation of these fossils shows that they were buried quickly and rapidly. And then you have these enormous gaps in the fossil record where there are no transitional forms. This is what this documentary is all about how this fossil record was much more consistent with catastrophic formation than evolution, but not the flood. They won't go all the way and just say that the fossil record is better supported by way of a global flood mechanism. The vast majority of your theistic evolutionists will go ahead and accept the conventional interpretation of the fossil record, that it was formed slowly and gradually over hundreds of millions of years and is a sequence that of the history of life on Earth, but doesn't support evolution, you know, in that classical sense. You don't, all these absent transitional, but they can see the problems with it. but they just won't go all the way and accept that the fossil record as a whole is a result of the global flood. And a fossil record is key, absolute key. You cannot have a correct worldview. You cannot have a correct view of world history unless you understand that the fossil record was a result of global flood, because it either supports evolution and an old, old earth, or it supports biblical history, that God's judgment came and destroyed the world by flood. That fossil record is absolutely key to a worldview today. You cannot have it without correct interpretation of fossils.
I think the book you're referring to is Darwin's Doubt.
Darwin's Doubt, yes.
Back there, yeah.
Stephen Meyer.
And that's further evidence that, you know, the biblical record is really accurate. Yeah.
What would be one of the key objections to intelligent design that they use against us?
Repeat the question.
What is one of the key objections to intelligent design that an evolutionist can use to, like, argue the existence of intelligent design? Well, they'll point to examples of
they really don't have a good answer. You know, let me just get one comment. The only difference between life and non-life is one thing, and that's information. Information, and it's in our DNA. When Dawkins is asked the question, how does the information get into the non-living material, he can't answer. There is no answer for him.
But also, one of the things that evolutionists are fond of doing, and Darwin did it himself. I mean, Darwin, in The Origin of Species, didn't really give a lot of evidence to support his claim altogether. It was a carefully worded argument, but very little evidence contained within it. But one of the things they're fond of doing, you see a highly complex eye. Well, here, there's a simpler eye. There are organisms with very simple eyes and organisms with very complex eyes. So this is a very complex eye, but here's an organism with a very simple eye. So see how through time and natural selection, you could ultimately get this complex eye from this simple eye. Oftentimes, our argument is that just that simple? And Darwin did the exact same thing. He realized that the eye was tremendously complex, and there's a good quote from him that this could he just did not see how something this complex could form by chance. And then he illustrated several eyes of increasing complexities to show how it could happen. They exist in levels of increasing complexity. So there you go.
Like you said, he showed how it could happen, but he has no evidence that it did happen.
Not really how it could happen either, just that there are various complexities out there, and so there you go.
Okay, so let's bring this to a close then, and we're going to have time for you to look at the tables back there to see the resources, the DVDs, the books, and the geology lab back there. Next meeting, next month, we're going to look at astronomy. You know, Chris talked about the complexity of the cell. Next month, we're going to look at the complexity of the universe at large. I mean, how do you explain that complexity? How do you explain where that design came from? You know, the evolutionists, they have no way of explaining it. If you look at the mathematical probabilities of either the cell forming by chance or the universe forming by chance, it can't happen. Mathematically impossible. So this is, you know, Chris's talk was great in that regard to the cell. And Chris, I want to thank you for doing that for us.